Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Ingrid van Ulhaven.
But Ingrid is okay.
We're here with your book, which is Hitler's Forgotten Children, My Life Inside the Lebensborn. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us what the Lebensborn was?
Lebensborn was an organization from the Nazis, from SS, and was founded at 1935, and Himmler was the leader, I think. Mm-hmm. The leader.
Yeah, it was founded by Heinrich Himmler.
Yes, and the aim was to produce many valuable children. Mm-hmm. And they had maternity homes and children homes, the Lebensborn, and in the maternity homes there came pregnant married women and unmarried women, and they these women want to birth their child there because it was anonymous and secret and safety, and so they have also the Lebensborn register office, so that the names from mother, father, and from the children could be held secret. Mm-hmm.
So these were, and if I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there were some centers. There were centers in Germany.
In Germany, yes.
There were also centers in Norway.
Yes.
And either German women, either, as you say, married or single, to produce Aryan children.
Yes.
So this was to be the Aryan race.
That's right.
To replace the Jews, the blacks, etc., that they were exterminating, to be replaced by these Aryan children. And you were...
There were many Norway children which were kidnapped, and Poland children, and Czechoslovakia. But when Yugoslavia were occupied, and there were many partisans who were against the Nazi regime. They took the children away with force and sent them to Germany for Germanization.
Okay.
And
it was about half a million children were taken from their either Eastern European homes.
Yes.
And sent to Germany to also be part of this Lebensborn program, this Aryanization of the race. Yeah.
And I came to Lebensborn. That's a bit difficult to explain. Also, my biologic mother, which I don't know, and father, and she had three children, Ludwig, Tanja, and Erika Matko. And Erika Matko was 9 months old when the parents with three children was imprisoned in Celje, that's a place in Slovenia, and were separated. It was a in a school, and father and mothers and children were separated. After 3 days, they could go home. And I saw it in Maribor Museum. There, they went home with three children, Ludwig, Tanja, and Erika Matko. They were could go home in the afternoon, but in the morning there was a transport for several children who were kidnapped or abducted to Frohnleiten, that's near Graz in Austria. And there was a child, which her name was Erika Matko. There are two Erika Matkos. And then the Erika Matko some of these children went to Werdenfels near Regensburg, and so they were collected, or if they can go to the Lebensbornheim or not. And this Erika Matko came to Kurensalis, that's near Leipzig, in a Lebensbornheim. Okay. And there she was 1 and a half.
Wow. So when you were 9 months old, the former Yugoslavia was taken over by the Nazis.
Yeah.
And your parents were taken in, and you were born Erika Matko.
Yeah.
And you were taken in, separated from your parents for a medical examination.
Yeah.
And a female child was returned to your parents.
Yes.
But you, Erika Matko, was sent
to
Germany.
Yes.
For this to be included in the Lebensborn program. So that was in, when you were born in 1942? Is that correct?
1941.
Yes.
And this other Erika, too.
Yes, both Erika Matko, twins, as it were, were both born in 1941. Yeah. And so then what happened to the Erika Matko that became Ingrid von Unhoff?
Yes, when I was 2 and a half, that was in June 1944, there was a family, Hermann von Oelhafen, who wanted a child, and they went to Lebensborn Kurensalis, and they took me. Mm-hmm. And so I was named Ingrid von Oelhafen. They changed the name, but in the office or administration, I always was Erika Matko, named Ingrid von Oelhafen.
Okay. And
there was another thing, because it was difficult when I started to watch, to search. The vaccination document, that is the only certificate that I had, that says I am born in St. Sauerbrunn in Austria.
Right.
And I always thought my whole life I'm born in Austria. St. Sauerbrunn.
Right. And you were born, you know, and Yugoslavia doesn't even exist any longer.
Yeah.
But you were born in what is today Slovenia.
Slovenian, yes.
Right. And so because of this, your immunization record, you thought you were Austrian.
Yes.
And you were born, you know, and lived Austrian. When, so do you have any memories of, do you have any early memories of your life?
My memory started when I was in a children's home, and there I was 5 and a half, I think.
Okay. And why were you...
Before, I don't know anything.
Okay. So what happened between when Herr von Oelhafen came and claimed you and decided you were his, you know, going to be living with his child?
I came to my mother had... not my mother, her uncle had a farm in Mecklenburg, Bandekow, and there we went.
Okay.
Because I think it was a bit dangerous in Hamburg. She was from Hamburg. And so we lived there, and I came several times to a Kinderheim. There was another child, a foster child, that was Dietmar. He was 9 months younger than me, but he was... there before me.
Okay.
They took him before. But it was not a Lebensborn child.
Okay. He was just adopted through other means.
Yeah.
Okay. And then why was your first memory in a children's home? Did that happen after the war, when the war ended?
Yes, it was. I was 5 or 6. It must be 56, 41, 56 or 50, 57. There was Christmas. That I remember, and there were large, many banks and tables, and all of them, there were old people and young people, and I saw a Christmas tree, and we had a plate with, I remember, oranges.
Right.
Yeah. And that was is the first memory of what I had.
Yeah. And so was that before you went with the von Ohlhoffens? Or
no, they sent me there.
Oh, okay.
We had to pass a border from Mecklenburg to Hamburg. My mother did it. That's written in the book because it was a bit difficult. And when we were in the West, Dietmar, that was a foster brother, and me were sent to children's
home. For safety.
Because there were, yes, and there was no place in Hamburg.
My weekday fix? Darling, it has to be Radio Gorgeous.
And so tell me about your childhood after that.
I stayed in this Kinderheim for, I think, about 4 years. And then my mother and father lived separate. And my father built a house in Bad Salzuflen. That's in North Rhine-Westphalen. And I think he thought that his wife came back. And then they took, my father, when the house was ready, took Dietmar and me to Bad Salzuflen. But okay. My mother was living in Hamburg. She had no own son. He was 8 years younger than me.
Okay.
I was not very happy with my father because he was a soldier, and he treated me like, we had, when we have to eat, we have to stand behind a chair and wait it till he sits, and he was very
strict.
Strict, yes.
As it sounds like it.
Yes.
Yeah. And so how long did you live?
2.5 years, and then okay. He died, and then I came to Hamburg to my mother. What I wanted always, but it was not the expectation I had. They didn't fill.
Yes. So you had always yearned. This is who you thought.
I wanted love.
Yes, and this is who you thought of as your mother.
Yes.
And you thought, oh, to be reunited, then it's going to be great.
Yes.
Yeah, not so much. Yes. So then...
But it wasn't like that. She was Hamburger are cool.
Okay, yes.
Not so cool what you say today.
No, but
the
cold.
Feeling.
Yes, cold,
feeling.
Yeah.
But she wasn't a cold woman, but for me it was a cool.
Yeah, because she was
woman.
Very reserved.
Yes.
It didn't show much
And I
love.
Think she doesn't, because I was 12, 13 when I came to her, and she doesn't know how to treat me, because I think I was difficult, maybe teenies, and that sort of thing. Then I went to the gym, and school.
Yes, so high school. Gymnasium is
gymnasium.
Like high
yes.
school. Yeah, or senior school
and,
here.
But
yeah.
I had to stop it with 10, when I was in the 10th class, and then I was sent to a household to Bodensee that was a friend of my grandmother, and I should learn the household, but I didn't.
Okay.
I did go to the fields and wash up the like that.
Okay.
But they
so you were being you, they thought that you would be trained to be a domestic.
Yes.
Domestic help.
But they had 6 daughters, and I was friendly, became friendship with 2 of them. It was a nice time. I liked it there. But the first time I was very homesick. But then, because it was a country and there was nothing, then fields and hens and cows and pigs. then I came back to Hamburg, and then I was for half a year, no, per Mädchen in Stevenage, near Stevenage. And then I came back, and I would have liked to do the Abitur. To go further to school, but
to
my
university
mother decided not, She decided that I get physiotherapist, and I could only start the physiotherapy with 18. That's why I had to fill the time.
Okay. So you were going to train as she, your mother decided
that
you were going to be a physiotherapist. Yes. So that was your lot. It sounds like a very, a bit a chaotic and lonely childhood. But I imagine in post-war Germany, a lot of people's lives were people were just trying to get back some normalcy, and there was a lot of that. So it didn't, it probably didn't look that unique to you at the time, because everybody was sort of displaced and moving here and there and this strange, lonely existence. But when did you find out? How was it, how were you told that you were part of the Lebensborn program?
Oh, I was never told. I find it out.
Oh.
Not myself. I was 58 when I got a phone call from Red Cross. If I am interested to find my parents, my biologic parents, and I don't know how they knew, they ring up in my praxis. And it was after Christmas 1999.
So all this time you have trained as a physiotherapist, as your mother has dictated.
Yeah.
And you've been working and living and...
But not always in Hamburg. I went first after I did my examination. I could go to forest, Schwarzwald.
Mm-hmm.
Have been working there for 1 year, that I see something different. But there were difficulties because my mother was handicapped mentally and physically. So I had to come back.
Okay.
I would have liked to go to America and a new method
mm-hmm.
for training, but that wasn't possible because I had to overtake the praxis.
Okay.
But
was your mother a physiotherapist?
Yes.
Okay, so
that's
you had to take over her practice because she was no longer able to work. Did you also have to take care of her?
Yes, but we had help because mm-hmm. she could pay it. And there was also a grandmother and an aunt, and the aunt decided. With 20, yes, I did the praxis, but I didn't like it because there were many grown-ups. I was 22 when I had to do that,
mm-hmm.
and I think I don't have experience, and I would have liked to learn more. Mm. And then I got a child with 3 years. She couldn't walk, and I thought, that's it. I made a course in Innsbruck for training children, and then the doctor asked me if I can work there, if I would do that, and I thought, I do it. It doesn't matter what's in Hamburg. My mother had somebody who mm-hmm. cares for her,
and someone else could take over the practice.
Mm-hmm. And then I stayed there, and then after 1 year, I got in love, and so I went to Osnabrück.
Okay. It sounds like that decision to go to Innsbruck and to train there, that was the first decision you made.
This was my own decision that I made, the first own decision.
Congratulations. It
was a lovely time there.
Yeah.
First the course, because I liked Austria with the hills, and it's weak, and we were all young people, and we went to hills up and
walking in the hills.
Walking and sleep there. And oh, it was lovely.
Yeah. And you were in love.
Because there was no what I have to do. It's only fun. It mm-hmm. was only fun.
Yeah.
And then I went to Osnabrück, and but with the love, it wasn't. It didn't work. And there I was in a hospital and worked there. And then I thought, when you are 30 or 35, you think that's your life. You must do something different. Mm-hmm. You are not in love, and there was no friend. And so I decided to learn more, and I went to Heidelberg. There was opportunity to learn a teacher for physiotherapists, and it took 1.5 years, and it was paid mm-hmm. because I couldn't have afford mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to do that, and then I meant I had to do it, and went to Würzburg for 3 years, and I knew after 14 days that's not my job. Because I didn't like to get notes for the pupils, and they won't always be noted. And
You wanted to do the work,
yes,
but not the administration.
And took the exams, and there were people who were very good during the 2 years they learned, but not in the exam. And then I had to give this note, and I thought it was not right.
Yeah.
And then I went. I went back to Osnabrück because I was thinking what I'm doing now with my life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to go to hospital. I didn't want to make a teacher. And sometimes I thought I'd go to development to Africa, mm-hmm. but that I didn't do because I had a horse for a short time. And then I decided to go to Osnabrück and asked the doctor where I worked for if he can manage it that I can work for my own. And he was helpful that I got rooms that I could rent. And then I went to Osnabrück and was my own.
So you set up your own practice.
Yes.
And then, is that where you were when the Red Cross found
there
you?
There was, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women, radiogorgeous.com.
So let's start from there. So you just got a letter from the Red Cross?
No, they phoned, and then they gave me the address, and I thought they would give the address from her parents, but that wasn't. So she gave me the address from Dr. Lilienthal. He's a historian man, and I wrote, and they told me he can help me, and so I wrote to him on the first year, January 2000, mm-hmm. and it took several weeks till I got an answer, because he wrote me then she had to think how to present me what my life was.
Yes. And when they first contacted you, did you have an idea that you were Lebensborn, or and had you ever heard of that?
No, I never didn't know about Lebensborn. But the woman told me, that she told me also that Dr. Lilienthal has written a book, and I bought it at once, so I was, I learned something about Lebensborn.
And did you have an idea that you might be one of these children?
Then, yes, because she told me I am.
Wow.
And I never thought in the vaccination certificate there stands Lebensborn, but it didn't say to me that.
It didn't mean anything
to
you?
No.
So it actually said Lebensborn in your vaccination certificate that
said
you were born in Austria.
Yeah.
Wow. And when you read her book and you got this information, what did...
I think incredible that couldn't be. But I didn't know what's with me. I only read it but I didn't know that's also me.
Yeah.
And then Dr. Lilienthal told me that he has read in lists of the Nürnberger archives that there is Erika Matko, and there was also written that my foster parents took me.
Wow.
And I was Ingrid von Oehlhafen. He said he knows these two names long time.
And that these two are linked and they are one and the same woman.
Yeah.
What did that, I mean, what does that do to your identity, your idea of yourself?
Yes, I was glad because I knew a little thing, because I didn't know anything. I always thought, why didn't my mother didn't want me, or is my father prisoned, and bad things, I thought. Mm-hmm. And so...
So you did know that you were adopted.
Yeah.
But you thought you were adopted like your brother.
So like we were never adopted. We were foster childs.
Oh, okay. But you knew you were a foster child.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were told that you were Erika Matko.
Yeah. And then Dr. Lilienthal asked himself, yes, what can I do? And he gave me, he didn't know. And he gave me the addresses from a ministry in Berlin, and I wrote to there. And they told me they can't help me, and they gave me the address from Slovenia. But
wow.
Dr. Lilienthal told me that I am possible Yugoslavia.
Possibly Yugoslavia.
Yes.
Yes. Right.
And so I wrote to Slovenia, but in the meanwhile, I wrote also to St. Sauerbrunn in Austria and asked for Erika Matko. And they told me there is nothing. And I wrote a second time. And so they told me that there is nothing, not about my parents or Erika Matko. And so they told me that there is St. Sauerbrunn in Slovenia. When Yugoslavia was occupied, everything was told in German. Okay. And this place, Sauerbrunn, is now Rogaška Slatina. And then I got from Slovenia several letters they couldn't help, but one could help, and I got a certificate. There was mentioned Helena Matko and Johann Matko, and the daughter was Erika Matko.
Wow.
Oh, and that was... I was very happy.
Mm.
And then I got the answer from Rogaška Slatina that I couldn't be Erika Matko.
Mm. So you find out you're both lost and found at the same time.
Yes.
Because on one hand you find I found out who I am. They've opened this can of worms. I find out that I'm Erika Matko.
There was nothing. And I stopped searching. But I was always lucky, or I had luck. 7 months later, Dr. Lilienthal wrote to me that he wants to do a meeting with the Lebensborn children, if I would take part of it. And I thought, I don't want, and then I did.
Yeah. Did you feel at that moment, you know, I'm Ingrid, I'm Erika, I don't, you know, I'm Lebensborn, I...
Yes, I always felt Ingrid because I have been grown up there. I went to school, I had my friend there, I hated there, I loved there, that was my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm Ingrid von Oehlhafen.
Yeah, and it's inseparable from...
Yes.
Regardless of how you were brought to Germany, that has been your life.
Yes.
And you don't feel Slovenian.
No.
Or even Yugoslavian.
But there was one time I didn't know what I'm, but that was when I was have been in Slovenia. Yes, then there was a meeting, and several Lebensborn children told about her life, and I didn't say anything. I only said, I don't nothing. I don't know nothing. And then there was a man, he was named the father finder, Joseph Fox. And I asked him if he could help me, and he did. And he was very busy. It started at once.
So he was coordinating and trying to find Lebensborn children to the parents that had been...
Yes, not only Lebensborn children, but many from France, from the war.
Right, so people who had been separated during that time, regardless of the circumstances.
And then he found some families with the name Matko, and then he pushed me that I have to go there and do a saliva test, and I was scared, and I have to do my praxis. And
I have important work to do here in Innsbruck.
I didn't do it at once, but he pushed, and then I said, okay, I'll do it. And he has prepared everything very well.
Why were you so reluctant? Because you felt, I mean, what were you scared of?
That they don't want me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, and then I flew there, and I had a company who could speak Slovenish.
A translator.
Yes, translator. I rented a car. I flew to Ljubljana, and then I rented a car, and we drove everywhere he wants. Mm-hmm. And so we visited the first time old lady with her son. They were very poor, and it was untidy. And this lady was very friendly, and she gave me a glass of wine. And then she did it with a saliva test. I had it with me. And we went to another woman. She was 35, I think. And she did the saliva test. And then we went to Rogaska, to Maria Matko. And she had two children and was married with Ludwig, Erika's brother. And she... didn't know and didn't think that I could be Erika Matko. But she spoke with her son, and he said yes. And so we did it before I flew away to Germany. And then, this is such a moment, I have to drink something.
There's nothing there.
Did you get some water? The water. Yes, and he gave it, and his sister was also there, but she didn't want, not now, but later she wanted.
She agreed.
Yes, she agreed. And then I sent it to Munich. There was a labor, and after some weeks I got the result, and there was a result that Raphael is to 93% acquainted with me.
Yes, that was your family.
That was, yes. And then Tanya, his sister, did also the test. I think they were curious. And that was also 91%.
Right.
And so I know that I belong to this family.
Mm.
But I wrote to Erika Matko as well, but she never answered. Mm. And I think it was for her, I think, a shock. Because she always knows that she belongs to Helena and Ignaz Matko. And she was ill and never had worked, and she was very cared from his family, and they told me that I don't have to disturb her. And so I couldn't do anything, course, I would know it for 150% when she made the test and to Raphael,
so,
then I would know.
But finding your family would displace her from hers. And they didn't want you because she's not physically well. They didn't want you to disturb her.
Yes.
So you lost family again.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I visit. Every year is a meeting there with stolen children, and I go every year to there, and there I met this family. They are very friendly to me.
So
and
this is the Matko family.
Matko family.
So you go to the Matko family reunion, but not with Erika.
No, not with Erika.
But with Ludwig's family.
Yes.
Yeah. So you have found family,
yes.
Some family,
yeah.
that embrace you and
yes.
accept you. Because your parents must have known that the child they got back was not Erika. But this is war, and
yes.
What do you do?
The children were separated, and I think there were many of the parents were shot, and the kinder, the children went to Frohnleiten, and I think that this Erika was alone.
Yeah.
And so my mother cried for the third child, and they gave it to her. I can't understand that, but I think she must be scared and because of the Nazis and shot. And her husband was before for 7 months in Mauthausen prison. And so I think she had fear that she could be also shot because the brother from Johann was shot.
Right.
Yeah.
No.
But, yes. First, I thought I hated her for that, and Erika too, because she doesn't want to meet me, but I can understand it now.
Yeah. That's hard, though.
Yeah.
It's
but
hard.
I was also, I thought she could have searched for me after the war, maybe heimlich, that nobody knows.
Yeah.
But she didn't.
Yeah, privately.
Yes.
Privately.
Because I think her husband didn't know, and the my siblings also. They were, when I was 9 months, they were 5 and 6 years old. They should have also met, but they were shocked, I think, traumatized.
Traumatized.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they...
Yeah. And how has, I mean, aside from the very personal aspects of what happened to the Matko family and the von Urhoffen family, being part of this horrendous legacy, you were given a great weight to bear. It's not as if you had any choice in this. But, and I know you're in touch with other Lebensborn children now. Is your experience quite common amongst the other people, or is there just...
No, it's quite different.
Mm.
There are two or three. They were from Poland. They find their family. They were also abducted. One never found his family. But most of the Lebensborn children were born there. But the mothers never told them. It was always a secret.
Wow.
Nobody told the children what was happened.
Mm.
And I think there was a shame, or I don't know.
Mm. There was a shame, but, you know, at the time it was done.
Yes.
With belief, maybe for brownie points. You know, maybe with pride.
Yeah.
Or maybe, you know, in the case of the von Urhoffens, you know, just because they wanted children.
Yeah.
You know, it was a way to have children.
But I don't know why they took us because they sent us away. And I think my father was 30 years older than my mother, and he was a soldier, Wehrmacht, or an officer, and he wants to, they want to take the ideas from a family how Himmler or Hitler wanted it. And so that's a family with children.
That's what it looks like.
Yes.
That's a good family is, you know, a family with blonde-haired, blue-eyed children, and so I'm following orders in this way. I will follow orders in my life as well.
You can rely on Radio Gorgeous.
But what is, I mean, because the experience of the Lebensborn in Norway, because it was much more public, is very different. But are you in touch with any of those?
No.
There's sort of separate.
It's separate, yes.
Separate.
They started once to come to our party, but there was so much differences in. So I left it with several people.
Yeah.
And it's too difficult with. Yes. Everybody is traumatized, I think.
Yes, traumatized.
And some could. Get over it, and some are always in. Always in.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Like any other trauma, that stays.
Yes,
you know, some people, the same set of circumstances can happen to different people, and some seem to, you know, sort of incorporate it, get over it, and carry on, whereas other people live their wounds much more freshly. And where do you think you fall in that? In that spectrum.
No, I think because I know so much, I like my life now. And I'm so happy that I know something. My wish would be that I can do a saliva test with Erica, but I don't know that it isn't possible.
And has doing all the research, because as you said, you went through the Nuremberg archives, and you've poured through a lot of this. Must be kind of scary to immerse yourself in this type of information. But has it helped you to tell your story and tell the story of other Lebensborn children and to write this book?
No, I couldn't. I couldn't speak about it a long time ago because I always must cry. And I think that was a crying from the first when I was adopted, because they told me, also in front as people in Slovenia, the children were older, that the babies had cried very much. And I think that was in my brain. I have to cry, and yes, that's today also.
Yeah.
But I'm happy that I found everything.
Yeah. It's better to know the ugly truth.
Yes.
than not know, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, it definitely places you in this world very firmly. If uncomfortably, you know, and you have to own your life. I mean, this is and you very much inhabit and own your own your life.
Also, I have been twice in Slovenia, the second time, and therefore I have been with a film producer.
A film? Yes,
and they we did my several stations how it was. I went to the church where I was getauft, water.
Oh, baptized.
Yes.
Baptized.
And
as Erika Matko.
As Erika Matko. And they told that I was
baptized.
Baptized with 5 or 6 days. And there was a pastor coming from Graz. It was no taufe in case I die or like that.
Okay.
And then we went several stages where I have been. Mm-hmm. And it was so intensive, and I lived in that. When I went back to Germany, I was living near Osnabrück in Hasbergen, a little station, and I stand there and thought, am I Slovenian or am I German? I didn't know, because it was so intensive. And then
did you really feel a connection to those places, to where you were baptized and where Hugh had been as a baby?
Not a connection, but I tried to feel it. And he always asked me, what do you feel? That was a bit... And also where we were imprisoned in Celje, in school. And yes, it was very intensive. And so I didn't know...
You went to the school
where
you
prisoned.
Had been separated from your parents, where that break happened.
Mm-hmm. And we have
where
also
all that
been,
crying came from.
Yes. And we were also being in Frohnleiten, where the camp where we were kidnapped. And so I stand on the station and didn't know what I am. And after 3 days, I know I'm German. Mm-hmm.
For better or for worse, this is you know, you are our lives and our identities are more than where we were born.
But I had always difficulties with my name, and was ashamed because it always by the doctor I was Erika Matko. At school I was Ingrid von Oelhaven, and that was not very good to change the name.
Yeah.
Not really to change it, that it's also on the paper.
Yeah, that there's the consciousness of that. Yeah. Mm. Ingrid, vielen Dank. Thank you so much. You've been very generous.
Yes.
Thank you.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us, contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com, and to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production, produced and presented by Donna Freed, edited by Bree Forer.